Welcome back, Hemming Brainiacs, to the Hemming Brain Podcast, the podcast where we do things the Hemming Brain. Guess who accidentally fell asleep and could have easily slept all night, but after 2 or 3 hours of that sleep is now up and doing a podcast and would very much rather have their eyes closed right now. I'll give you 3 guesses, and if none of those guesses are me, you are a stupid person. We're talking about book 1, chapter 24. Julian wasted no time here. Was that what it was like back then? You met someone pretty and then both just agreed that you're in love now. That was really weird. He just kind of went to a cafe and then the girl was like, "Oh, you seem attractive." And he was like, "Oh, you seem attractive." And then they're like declaring love for one another. It's like, mate, come on. Just throw around the big old L word like that. So, it got me thinking, was it different back then? What do we got here? Swim said the mum fish. She said, the book, Julian quotes to Amanda, wait a minute. Where's all the comments? I know there's more comments than that. Apparently there's only one comment on this chapter. That can't be right. Huh. One comment on this chapter. There we go. You've reached a whole new low. The book Julian quotes to Amanda is Julie, or the New Eloise, French Julie, ou la Nouvelle Eloise. I made up that pronunciation. Originally entitled Lettres de deux amants, habitants d'une petite ville au pied des Alpes, letters from two lovers living in a small town at the foot of the Alps, is an epistolary novel by Jean-Jacques Rousseau, published in 1761 by Marc Rochelle Ray in Amsterdam. Back in the day, I remember being young and flirting like mad with boys and them flirting right back. That was so much fun. Julian seems to bring out the maternal side of older women. I also understand this. I've reached the advanced age where young men now remind me of my 3 sons, and I too want to mother them. Okie dokie. I suppose that's not weird. is it? Now, what happened here? Why is there so few? Okay. I suppose there was just not much to talk about this time around, which is funny though, because it was a chapter that I thought was quite provocative. I thought it might provoke quite a bit of conversation. It really seemed like this chapter should have, like, felt like it was like the first part. Like, if this was chapter 1 of part 2, you wouldn't question it, because it was such a departure, right? From, we're in a new city, new people, whole new chapter of his life going on, so to speak. Anyway, excuse me. Julian is off to the seminary and he's already fallen in love with a girl. Very, very cool. Let us continue reading then, shall we? And see what happens. Now, young hero. Chapter 25 is called The Seminary, and it goes like this. 336 dinners at 83 centimes, 336 suppers at 38 centimes, chocolate for those that are allowed it. How much might one make on this deal? The Valinor of Vasicon. He saw the gilded iron cross over the door from far off. He approached it slowly. His legs seemed about to give way under him. Here, then, is this hell on earth from which I shall not be able to escape. Eventually he made up his mind to ring. The sound of the bell echoed as if in a deserted place. After 10 minutes had gone by, a pale individual dressed in black came to open the door to him. Julian looked at him and immediately lowered his eyes again. This porter had a most peculiar physiognomy. The bulging green pupils of his eyes were rounded like those of a cat, the eyelids unwinking, set, denied the possibility of any human warmth. The thin lips described a semicircle around protruding teeth, yet this physiognomy betrayed not so much a criminal nature as that complete lack of responsiveness which is even more terrifying to the young. The only feeling Julian's rapid survey could discern in this long, sanctimonious countenance was a profound contempt for anything anyone might say that did not concern the life hereafter. With an effort, Julian raised his eyes again, and in a voice that quavered from the throbbing of his heart, explained that he wished to speak to Monsieur Pirard, the director of the seminary. Without a word, the black-clad man gestured for him to follow. They climbed two flights of a wide staircase with a wooden rail whose warped steps sagged right down on the opposite side of the wall and seemed about to collapse. A small door crowned by a large black painted deal funeral cross was negotiated with difficulty, and the porter showed him to a low dark room where the whitewashed walls were decorated with the two large pictures blackened by time. There Julian was left alone. He was terrified, and his heart thumped violently. He would have been happy to find the courage to weep. A deathly silence reigned throughout the building. At the end of a quarter of an hour, it seemed to him a day, the porter's sinister face reappeared at the threshold of a door at the other end of the room, and without deigning to speak, he made a signal for him to advance. Julian entered a chamber even larger than the first and very ill-lit. Its walls, too, were white, but here there were no furnishings. Only as he passed a small corner near the door did Julian glimpse a deal pallet with two wicker chairs and a little armchair made of unupholstered planks of pine. At the other end of the chamber, next to a little window glazed with yellowing panes and decorated with ill-tended vases of flowers, he saw a man dressed in a shabby soutane, seated in front of a table. He seemed angry and was picking up small slips of paper one after another from a heap. Arranging them on the table, after having written a few words on each, he did not notice Julian's presence. Julian stood motionless in the middle of the chamber, where the porter who had departed closing the door had left him. 10 minutes went by in this way. All the time the ill-dressed man went on writing, Julian's agitation and dread was such that he felt himself on the point of collapse. A philosopher might have commented, perhaps mistakenly, "This is the violent impression ugliness makes on a soul created to love beauty." The man writing lifted his head. Julian perceived this only after a moment, and then, even when he realized it, he remained rooted there as though the terrible gaze fixed upon him had dealt a mortal blow. His tear-dimmed eyes could barely make out a long face covered all over with red blemishes, except on the forehead, which had a deathly pallor. In the midst of red cheeks and a white forehead glittered two small dark eyes fit to daunt a hero. The forehead's massive contours were outlined by a head of thick, flat hair, as black as jet. "Do you want to approach, yes or no?" the man said at last, peremptorily. Julian advanced falteringly, near to collapse and paler than he had ever been in his life, and at last came to a stop 3 paces from the little deal table covered in slips of paper. "Nearer," said the man. Julian moved forward again, holding a hand in front of him as though seeking something for support. "Your name?" "Julian Sorel." "You are exceedingly late," he said, fixing him again with his terrible eyes. Julian could not endure this gaze. Stretching his hand out as though for support, he fell full length on the floor. The man rang the bell. Julian had lost only the use of his eyes and ability to move. He heard steps approaching. Someone lifted him up, and he was set on a little deal armchair. He heard the voice of the terrifying man say to the porter, "He's fallen down in a fit, it seems. It's the limit." When Julian managed to open his eyes again, the man with the red face was continuing with his writing. The porter had disappeared. "It's essential that I be brave," our hero said to himself, "and above all hide my feelings." He felt terribly sick. If I'm taken ill, God knows what they'll think of me. At last the man stopped writing and looked sideways at Julian. Are you in a fit state to answer me? Yes, monsieur, said Julian in a weak voice. Ah, that's lucky. The black-clad man had risen half to his feet and was searching impatiently for a letter in the drawer of his pine table, which creaked as he opened it. He found it, sat down slowly, and gazing once more at Julian in a way that seemed about to tear out what little life he had left. You're recommended to me by Monsieur Chaland. He was the best of parish priests, virtuous man that he is, and my friend for 30 years. Ah, it's Monsieur Pirard to whom I have the honour of speaking, said Julian in a sinking voice. So it would seem, replied the director of the seminary, looking at him irritably. The gaze in the little eyes increased in intensity, followed by an involuntary contraction of the muscles at the corners of the mouth. The countenance of a tiger savouring in advance the delights of devouring his prey. Chaland's letter is short, said he, as though talking to himself. Intelligenti poscia, the way it is these days, it's impossible to write too little, he read aloud. I send to you Julian Sorel of this parish, whom I baptized some 20 years since. He is the son of a rich carpenter, but who gives him nothing. Julian will be a notable worker in the vineyard of the Lord. Memory and intelligence are not lacking, and he is capable of thought. Will his vocation endure? Is he sincere? Sincere, repeated the Abbe Pirard, Julian, looking at Julian with an air of great surprise. However, the look was now less completely devoid of humanity. Sincere, he repeated, lowering his voice and resuming his reading. I ask you for a scholarship for Julian Sorel. He will deserve it by submitting to the necessary examinations. I have introduced him to a little theology, the old and sound theology of Bossuet, and Arnold and Fleury. If this person does not suit you, send him back to me. The director of the poorhouse, with whom you are well acquainted, offers him 800 francs to be tutor to his children. As for me, I enjoy inner peace. Thanks be to God. I have reconciled myself to that terrible blow. Vale et ama. The Abbe Pirard, speaking more slowly as he got to the signature, pronounced the word Chaland with a sigh. He is at peace, said he. Surely, indeed, his virtue deserves that reward God granted to me in like circumstances. He looked up to heaven and made the sign of the cross. At the sight of this pious action, Julian felt some relief from the deep horror that had chilled him from the moment he had entered the building. I have here 320 aspirants to the most holy of estates, the Abbe Pirard said at last, in a severe yet not inimical tone. Only 7 or 8 have come recommended by men like Abbe Chaland. Therefore, among these 321, you will be the 9th. However, my patronage involves neither favour nor indulgence. It means a redoubling of effort and of vigilance against vice. Go and lock the door. Julian forced himself to walk and managed not to fall. He noticed that a little window near the entrance gave onto the fields. He saw the trees. The sight did him good, as though he had glimpsed some old friends. Locrim linguam lintiam, do you speak Latin? Abbe Pirard asked him as he walked back. Ita pater optimi, yes, most excellent father, answered Julian, reviving a little. Surely never had any man in the world seemed less excellent to him than Monsieur Pirard during the last half hour. The conversation continued in Latin, the expression of the Abbe's eyes softened. Julian regained some self-confidence. How feeble I am, he thought, to let myself be imposed upon by these shows of virtue. This man will prove an ordinary scoundrel like Monsieur Mazon, and Julian congratulated himself on having hidden nearly all his money in his boots. The Abbe Pirard examined Julian on theology and was surprised at the extent of his knowledge. His surprise increased when he questioned him more closely on the sacred scriptures, but when he came to questions of patristic doctrine, he realized that Julian hardly even knew the names of St. Augustine, St. Bonaventure, St. Basil, etc. In fact, thought Abbe Pirard, this is obviously that fatal leaning towards Protestantism that with which I have always reproached Chaland. a profound, a too profound knowledge of Holy Writ. Julian had just been talking without being asked about the subject of the actual times when Genesis, the Pentateuch, etc. had been composed. To what does this... excuse me. To what does this endless pondering of the scriptures tend, thought Abe Pirard, if it's not the individual interpretation, that is to say, to the most frightful Protestantism. And beside this dangerous knowledge, nothing from the fathers that might counterpoise the tendency. But the director's astonishment was boundless when he came to question Julian about the authority of the Pope. He was expecting to get the doctrines of the traditional Gallican Church, but instead heard the young man reciting the whole of Monsieur de Maistre's book. What a strange man Chelan is, thought the Abbé Pirard. He has introduced him to that work to show him how to parody it. It was useless questioning Julian in order to find out if he was seriously believed Monsieur de Maistre's doctrines. The young man answered only by rote. From that time, Julian really was very good. He felt that he was in control of himself. After a very extended examination, it seemed to him that Monsieur Pirard's severity towards him was only pretended. And indeed, if the director of the seminary had not, for the last 15 years, imposed principles of gravity and austerity upon himself with regard to his theological students, he would have embraced Julian in the name of logic. Such clarity, accuracy, and precision did he find in his answers. Here is a strong and healthy mind, he said to himself, though corpus debile, the body is weak. Do you often fall down like that? He asked Julian in French, pointing to the floor. That was the first time in my life. The porter's face petrified me, added Julian, flushing like a child. The Abbé Pirard almost smiled. You see the effects of worldly appearances. You're used to smiling faces, it seems, those veritable showplaces of falsehood. Truth is austere, monsieur. But our task here below isn't that austere also. It is essential that your conscience guards vigilantly against this weakness, excessive sensitivity concerning vain exterior graces. If you had not been recommended to me, said Abbé Pirard, returning with marked pleasure to the Latin tongue, if you had not been recommended to me by such a man as the Abbé Chelan, I would speak to you in the vain language of that world to which it seems you are only too well accustomed. The entirety of the scholarship for which you ask is, I should tell you, the most difficult thing in the world to obtain. But Abbé Chelan has deserved little indeed for his 56 years of apostolical labours. If he is unable to dispose of one scholarship at the seminary, after saying this, the Abbé Pirard advised Julian not to join any secret society or congregation without his consent. I give you my word of honour, said Julian, open-heartedly, like a gentleman. The director of the seminary smiled for the first time. That word is not at all in place here, said he. It is far too redolent of an empty honour of worldly men that's conducive to so many faults, often to crimes. You owe me a religious obedience by virtue of paragraph 17 of the Bull Unam Ecclesiam of the St. Pius V. I am your ecclesiastical superior. In this house, my very dear son, to understand is to obey. How much money have you got? Here we go, said Julian to himself. That's what this very dear son is about. 35 francs, father. Keep a careful written record of how you spend this money. You'll have to render an account of it to me. This exhaustive interview had lasted 3 hours. Julian called the porter. Go and put Julian Sorel in cell number 103. The Abbé Pirard ordered the man. As a great mark of distinction, he was according Julian a separate lodging. Take his trunk there, he added. Julian looked down and saw that his trunk lay exactly opposite him. He had been gazing at it for 3 hours and had not recognized it. When he arrived at number 103, which was a little closet, 8 foot square, on the top floor of the house, Julian found that it gave on to the ramparts, and that over those one could see the fine-looking plain that is separated from the town by the Doubs. What a delightful view, cried Julian. But as he uttered this exultation, exclamation. He was devoid of the feeling the words expressed, such violent sensations as he had experienced in the short time he had spent in Bezukhan had completely exhausted his powers. He sat down by the window on the single wooden chair in his closet and immediately fell fast asleep. He heard neither the bell for supper nor that for a benediction. He'd been forgotten. When the first rays of the sun woke him next morning, he found himself stretched out on the floor. All right, there we go. There's another chapter done. Oops. Have your say about that one over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.